I call your attention this evening to the Old Testament. I want you to go to Proverbs chapter 15. Proverbs 15. The title of the message tonight is Kind Words. Kind Words. I have never cared about being around unkind people with their sharp tongues. You say, have you been around that many? More than my share. I've got some people in my family that were like that. I'm thinking specifically about one of the ladies in my family. I'm talking about extended, not my mama or my sister, but extended. And her attitude was, if I think it, I ought to say it. She said one time that, well, sometimes I just have to get things off my chest. And I'm thinking, does it have to be every time? She would say things and it would hurt people. I've had other people that have been that way, and I just don't particularly care about being around people like that. Now, I can understand rebuke. I have been rebuked before. And if that rebuke comes from a godly source, my first reaction is not rebellion. My first reaction is to look inside and do a little inspection inside. Years ago, the first year I was here at the church, I didn't have a clue what I was doing. Sometimes I wonder if I still don't have a clue. But that first year, I was in charge of athletics. And I was just used to playing ball, not really organizing ball. And on two different occasions, I had a team show up and the other team had a revival or something and couldn't come, and so they didn't have anybody to play. And it was a little girls' team. At one time, we had the largest Christian athletic association in Gwinnett County. It matched really kind of like what Rehoboth had in DeKalb County. And we had like 8 to 11-year-old kids, boys and girls, and then 12 to 15-year-old boys and girls, and then we had the adult teams, and anybody 16 or above could play on the men or the women. And I mean, on a Friday night and on a Saturday, they were people everywhere. And on those two occasions, there was a team that got there to play that did not have anybody to play. And on that second occasion, the coach of that team was a man that was a pillar in this church. I had his funeral. His name was Hollis Reese. Hollis was one of the godliest men that I have ever known. And he said, I want to tell you something. He said, you know what you need to do? You need to start doing your job. And my first thought was, y'all not talk to me that way. I'm on staff of this church. But then I went home and I looked in the mirror and I thought, is he right? And he was absolutely right. And for a long time, he thought I didn't like him. But I told him over the years, over the next, well, probably 35 years, every once in a while I would say, you helped me in those early years as much as anybody has ever helped me because you had the courage to tell me the truth. And he smiled, and he became one of my dearest friends. He was really a mentor and a friend. And so sometimes harshness can be good, but sometimes harshness is just ugly. Sometimes it's just evil. And so tonight, I want us to think about the words that we use as believers. Because the Bible's got a lot to say about that. I want you to look at Proverbs 15. Now, the verse that we're going to focus on is verse 23. I'll read that to you now, and then I'll come back to it in a moment. A man hath joy by the answer of his mouth, and a word spoken in due season, how good is it? I want you to think about that verse. A man, he has joy by the answer that he has in his own mouth. And a word that's spoken in due season, oh, it's good. Oh, it's good. Now, I want you to do something. I want you to notice some of the negative words in this chapter. Go back to the beginning of the chapter, chapter 15. Now, we're not going to read this whole chapter. I'm just going to give you some highlights. I want you to look at verse 1. And I want you to notice two words, wrath and anger. Those are negative words. I want you to look at verse 2. I want you to look at the word foolishness. I want you to look at verse 5. A fool despiseth. Verse 6. For the wicked is trouble. Verse 7. The heart of the foolish. Verse 8. The sacrifice of the wicked is an abomination. Verse 9, the way of the wicked is an abomination. Verse 10, correction is grievous unto him that forsaketh the way. He don't want to hear that when somebody gets on to him. Verse 11, hell and destruction. Verse 12, a scorner. Verse 14, the mouth of fools feedeth on foolishness. Verse 16, trouble. Verse 17, hatred. Verse 18, a wrathful man. Verse 19, the slothful man. Verse 20, a foolish man despiseth his mother. Verse 21, folly, destitute of wisdom. Verse 24, hell from beneath. Verse 25, destroy. Verse 26, wicked are an abomination. 27, greedy troubleth. Verse 28, the wicked poureth out out evil things. Verse 29, far from the wicked. Verse 32, he that refuseth instruction despiseth his own soul. You see all those negatives? In other words, when the writer of Proverbs, King Solomon, he is giving all of these wisdom thoughts, he is constantly talking about the good versus the bad. You do one thing that's good, you do the same thing, it's better. You keep doing it, and it keeps getting better and better. But if you begin to do evil things, the next thing you know, there's danger. There's destruction. There's an abomination. There's folly. All of those things. And you and I, we've got to have the wisdom to know what and how to say things. Now go back to our verse in verse 23. He says that a man hath joy by the answer of his mouth. Now, there's two parts to this verse. So the first thing that I want you to understand from our first part about a man hath joy by the answer of his mouth, that the words that we use shape our experience and our relationships. Now, I want that to sink in for a moment. The way that you have a relationship with another person is directly connected to how you speak to one another. I've known of people that would speak harshly to one another. I had someone tell me this the other day. about a mutual couple. And he said, you know, I was shocked to hear this. But he said, you know, so-and-so, he said, have you ever been around them, he and his wife, with just you two, you and your wife and them and their wife? And I said, no. He said, Tommy, it's awful the way that he speaks to her. And I'm thinking about that, and I'm like, well, you know, that'd be trouble at my house. My wife and I, we don't speak ugly to each other. First of all, she wouldn't put up with it, and second of all, I wouldn't either. There's a law of kindness at our house. And there ought to be a law of kindness among brothers and sisters in Christ. There ought to be a law of kindness that percolates in our soul. And so your relationships are going to rise and fall on the words that you use. There ought to be a kindness in the way that a man speaks to his wife. There ought to be a kindness in the way that a wife speaks to her husband. Sometimes if you look at the person that is portrayed on television as the husband and the father, he's usually the stupidest guy in the room. Gone are the days of father knows best. You know, he's usually an Archie Bunker type. That's dating myself right there. These kids don't even know who Archie Bunker is. But the relationships that we have, there's a kindness that ought to be there. The second part of this verse, it says that a word spoken in due season. Now, when you do something in due season, there's a couple of things that I want you to remember. There's a right content, and there's a right timing. Now, years ago, when Miss Hicks, Annette Hicks, and Sandy Dietz were the ladies that worked in our office, if they had something on their mind that they wanted to have done, a lot of times what they would do is they would come to me and they would say, hey, we want you to go ask the preacher this. And I said, why don't you go do it? And they would say, because if you ask him, he'll do it. And I said, that's not necessarily so. And they were like, yes, it is. And I said, okay, I'll do it with this little caveat. I do it my way and in my time. And they would say, well, why is that? I said, because there's a right time to say something and there's a wrong time to say something. There's a right set of words to use and there's a wrong set of words to use. And you've got to know the people that you are addressing. When I coached some ball years ago, one of the things that a ball coach has got to know is the personality of his players. I would take somebody out of the game and it'd be fine. But there would be other people that if I took them out of the game, it would crush them. And they may be done. They may say, I'm just not playing. I'm thinking about one specific fella. He went through the whole year. Now, he was not that good of a ball player. But I would take good ball players that could hit the ball over the fence and had good arms, and I mean they could run and they could catch. I would put them out to substitute, but I never took him out because I did not want to crush him. There was just a way that you had to know the people that were on your team. Now, if you're in the NFL or the NBA, it's all meritocracy. The last time I checked, they didn't have 5'4" Chinamen playing in the NFL. They don't have, you know, short, fat guys like me that make it on an NBA roster. You have people that can play at those particular levels, but when you're just in an everyday situation, kindness ought to rule. Kindness ought to be always on your lips. And so you've got to know the right way to do it, and you need to know the timing in how to do it. And so there ought to be something in you that says, be kind, be kind, be kind. Now I want to give you some verses, and I want you to write these down. And we'll go through these, and hopefully the computer will be fast so that you can see these. I want you to go to Ephesians 4:32. Ephesians 4:32. And be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. That's a key verse. So in other words, there ought to be a kindness that you have toward each other. That means that a man ought to be kind to his wife. That means that a father ought to be kind to his kids. That means that a grandmother ought to be kind to her to the grandfather. That means that a layman ought to be kind to another brother in Christ who is a layman. That means that teenagers ought to be kind to everybody that is in that youth group. The college and career ought to be kind to everybody that's in that Bible study. People in Awana ought to be kind to everybody that comes to Awana. Everybody that comes to Sunday school, they ought to be getting along. Why? Because the law of Christ is permeating in their life. Be kind and tenderhearted. Don't be harsh. Don't be as sharp as a serpent's tooth. Be kind. I want you to look at Proverbs 11:17. Proverbs 11:17. The merciful man doeth good to his own soul. When you practice mercy, when you give kindness to people, it's beneficial to you. I think that when we are unkind to people, the last part of 17 says that if we're cruel, we troubleth our own flesh. And that's probably the Holy Spirit of God that's convicting us of the way that we spoke to somebody that we ought to be loving. And so we see that if you want to have a flesh or a soul that is not troubled, then you better have mercy when you're speaking to other people. There ought to be a kindness that you use when speaking to other people. I want you to look at 1 John 3:18. 1 John 3:18. My little children, let not us love in word. Oh, I love everybody, preacher. Oh, I love everybody. I tell them that. Yeah, and we say that, and yet there's some that we don't have time for. There's some that we don't really care about. As a Christian, we are supposed to love in deed and in truth. I want you to look at Galatians 5:22 and 23. You guys know this passage. Galatians 5:22 and 23. This is the fruits of the Spirit. But the fruit of the Spirit, if you've got the Holy Ghost inside of you, these things ought to be in there somewhere. Love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance, and against such there is no law. When we have those fruits, it makes a difference. I want you to look with me at Zechariah chapter 7, verse 9 and 10. And I'm skipping some of these. I wrote down more than we need to get to tonight because I promised you we're going to try to get done. Zechariah chapter 7, verse 9 and 10. Thus speaketh the Lord of hosts, saying, execute true judgment and show mercy and compassions every man to his brother, and oppress not the widow, nor the fatherless, the stranger, nor the poor, and let none of you imagine evil against his brother in your heart. In other words, you watch your attitude. You watch what your heart's like. Don't think, well, I can say something because they didn't hear me say it. God heard you say it. And you and I, if we're going to practice kindness, we do it all the time. We do it at home. We do it at work. We do it in the car if we've got somebody in the car with us. We do it at school. We do it wherever we are at. We practice kindness, kind words. There are biblical examples all through the Bible. Genesis 18, there's a group of men. Abraham has no idea who they are in Genesis 18. And they come, and what does he do? The first thing he does is said, it's hot, fellas. Come on in. Come into the tent. And he shows hospitality to these strangers that turn out to be angels. What about Ruth chapter 2? You've got a Moabite woman, a young girl, and she was the daughter-in-law to a Jewish lady named Naomi. Ruth comes back to Bethlehem. She's a Moabite. People look at her and they go, she's not one of us. She's an outcast. And what takes place in Ruth chapter 2? Boaz, the kinsman redeemer. He redeems her and they get married and she becomes the great-grandmother of King David. Boaz didn't have to marry her. There were plenty of women around Bethlehem that he could have married. But there was something about that man. There was a kindness that he showed to a Moabite woman. Well, what about 2 Samuel chapter 9? There's a crippled man. His name is Mephibosheth. And Mephibosheth was of the household of Saul. He was the tribe of Benjamin. And when Saul was no longer the king and he was killed and David became king, Mephibosheth, he thought that David was going to be like Baasha and was going to kill everybody in the royal house. And so he left. He was a cripple boy and he was living in a place called Lodibar. It was a desolate place. I mean, imagine living in the Mojave Desert. Imagine living somewhere where nothing grew because the ground was so awful. And you've got Mephibosheth and he's there barely scraping by. And one night, David's thinking, is there anybody left in the house of Saul? The same man that tried on at least three occasions to assassinate David. But David loved that man. And he said to himself, is there anybody that's left in his house that I can show a kindness to? And they get the records out and somebody says, well, there's a man down in Lodibar. His name is Mephibosheth. And he sends people down to Lodibar to get Mephibosheth. And he's thinking, oh my soul, he's found me. He's going to kill me. But instead of killing him, they bring him back along with his little bitty family. And he says, you're going to eat in the king's house. You're going to be with me from now on. You're not going to barely make it. You're going to have what I have to eat. You're going to have to eat. There was a kindness that was shown. And what about John chapter 4? When Jesus goes through the city of Sychar in Samaria. Orthodox Jews wouldn't go through there because that's where the half-breeds lived. And Jesus said, I must needs go through Samaria. And he got to that well of Jacob. And he's just standing there and he's waiting for this lady. And then she begins to dip and he begins to talk to her. And Jesus shows that lady that nobody has anything to do with because she'd been married five times. She's living with a man that's not her husband. And yet Jesus saves her and gives her living water. He shows a kindness to her. And you and I, that ought to be the heartbeat of our Christian walk. Who can I be kind to today? I want to give you three things and I'll be done. Number one, kindness builds. Kindness builds. I came across this 45 years ago, and I want to read it to you. It's a poem. It's written by a man named Edgar Guest, and it's called The Wrecking Crew. He said, I watched them tearing a building down, a gang of men in a busy town. With a heave-ho and a lusty yell, they swung a beam and a sidewall fell. I asked the foreman, are these men skilled? The men you'd hire if you had to build? He gave me a laugh and said, no, indeed, just common labor is all I need. I can easily wreck in a day or two what builders have taken a year to do. And I thought to myself as I went my way, which of these two roles have I tried to play? Am I a builder who works with care, measuring life by rule and square? Am I shaping my deeds by a well-made plan, patiently doing the best that I can? Or am I a wrecker who walks the town content with labor of tearing down? When I came across that 45 years ago, my first thought was, am I a wrecker or am I a builder? One of the things that I want to do as a pastor of this church and as a preacher of the gospel, I want to try to build people. I want to try to encourage people. I don't want to constantly be on somebody's backside where that they're, man, he is always on us about something. Now, I preach hard sometimes. I really do. And I'm telling you right now, it is a part of the Christian life to show kindness to people. Let me tell you a funny story. Years ago, we had a lady that was touched at the church that I was saved at. When I say touched, she was nuts. Okay? I'm about to tell you, every Sunday, did not matter if it was winter, did not matter if it was fall, it did not matter if it was spring or if it was summer, she wore the exact same thing every single Sunday morning. Her name was Sally. I don't think we got any Sallys here tonight. But this was Sally. She had on a red rain hat, a red raincoat, red dress that was long, red shoes, and a red umbrella. And she had her place to sit. It was the second row in the middle in front of the pulpit. And one Sunday morning, there was a couple that was sitting there. They had gotten there before Sally did. They didn't know that was Sally's seat. But they sat there, and she walked over to him, and she just went. And just stared at him. Well, I'm sure they picked up on the fact that she was nuts. Red hat, red raincoat, red long dress, red shoes, red umbrella. Didn't matter if it was raining outside or not. She had that umbrella. And finally they go, is this your seat? And she goes. And so they were like, okay. So they got up and just kind of went to the other end to get away from her. Now, you know what? She has an excuse. She was crazy. But there are sane people that name the name of Christ, and they have things happen like that, and they think nothing about it. The law of Christ is that we show kindness by preferring others against us. And you and I, we need to make sure that we understand that kindness ought to be a part of your life. Kids, let me ask you a question. You ever have a game? I'm getting too far away here from the mic. You ever have a game where you pick sides? Let me see some heads. I see three of you. Okay. All righty. How many of you has ever been chosen last? A couple of you? All right. When you're chosen last, that usually means that you're the lousiest one left. Isn't that what that means? How does that make you feel if you're out there and you're there? You go, Well, I'm going to get Levi. We'll choose him last. I mean, he's the worst out here. You know why they're, you know what they're, in your mind you're thinking, am I really the worst? I thought I was decent. But because you chose last, all of a sudden, there's something inside that's like, man, I don't like that feeling. We've had kids that came through our youth group eons ago, and they would be guests. And I would watch, and I would see how they would be chosen for various games. And I determined that one of the things that I would do is I would try to teach them by example. And we used to have what is called Monday Night Football. Monday Night Football was something that started when I was a kid. Now they have it on Thursday. Now they have it on Saturday. Sometimes they have it on Friday. They play in other parts of the world now. All right? But Monday Night Football with Howard Cosell, Frank Gifford, and Don Meredith, that was great. And so we would have Monday Night Football at the old church under the lights, and we would have 30 guys come out on a Monday night, and we would pick up teams, and I always said, I'll be a coach, and I'll pick second. And everybody's like, oh, great, that's great. And I would always do this, and I'm not patting myself on the back. This is just something that I always wanted to do. I would choose the worst kid out there as my first pick. Now, why is that? Because it was important for me to put something in that kid. Well, Brother Tommy sees something in me. And every kid that comes through our youth group, there's something special about those kids. They may not be the best basketball player. They may not be the best singer. They may not be the best anything. But there's something special. God made them unique. And it's up to you to teach or treat those kids with kindness. Just like those youth groups that I had, it was up to those kids that I had to treat those other kids with kindness. To be ugly is not good. That is not Christian. And so that's what I would do on Monday Night Football. I read this I had Sarah look it up because I was telling her about it. And then I looked it up again today. But how many of you old people remember a singer in the 70s named Janis Ian? Three of you. Okay. I'm telling you, evidently you have lived sheltered lives. Janis Ian sang a song called 17. And it was talking about a 17-year-old girl and the things that she was going through. And I wrote this down because she considered herself to not be an attractive girl. And nobody ever called her for a date. And nobody ever invited her to do anything. And that's the way that sometimes people that come to a church feel. Because they are not treated kindly. And this is what she said. To those of us who knew the pain of Valentine's that never came, and those whose names were never called when choosing sides at basketball, it was long ago and far away. The world was younger than today, when dreams were all they gave for free to ugly duckling girls like me. One of the problems, especially with young girls, is they have poor self-esteem. They think, I am nothing. And then when you compound that with somebody saying something ugly, guys disguise it better. They try to be a little more macho. But the bottom line is, all people are insecure no matter what their age is, unless they are really, really grounded in the Lord. And you and I, we need to remember that we ought to be a kind people. Number two, kindness is central to genuine Christianity. Now let that sink in for a moment. Now you think about those verses that we read. Think about this one right here. Let none of us imagine evil in his brother, evil against his brother in your heart. That is a central tenet of Christianity. What did Jesus say to those disciples when all of those little kids were coming around? And they're going, get away, leave the master alone. And Jesus said, knock it off. You suffer those little kids to come unto me, for such is the kingdom of heaven. Can I tell you that I would rather have kids that come to this church that have dirty hands than to have no kids that come to this church with clean hands? I want people to come to this church. If they're unlovely, let's let Jesus make them lovely. And let's do our part to encourage them and build them. Let's show a kindness to them, because that is a central tenet of a person that has genuine Christianity. I think that being unkind is a godless trait. That's what the world does. The world takes people and throws them on trash heaps, and they don't care about them. But God's people aren't that way. We're not supposed to be anyway. Let me give you the last thing, number three. Kindness reflects God's compassion and love to us. To be honest with you, we're an unlovely bunch. You think about the fact that when God looked down at you, all he saw was nothing but unrighteousness. When God looked down at me, all he saw was a bunch of sin. He saw a boy that was trying to commit every sin he could possibly think of. But when God looked and he saw me, he showed me a kindness. And in 1972, that kindness transformed into me being born into God's family. And can I tell you that I've never forgotten my unloveliness? I've never forgotten my sinfulness. I've never got to the point where I thought, hey, I'm somebody special. I get to go to heaven because I'm a preacher. No. No, God was gracious and kind in even putting me in this position. He showed me love, and he showed me compassion, first of all, by my salvation. And second of all, by me having the privilege of serving him with my whole life. Kindness. Oh, it is a reflection to other people. Now, if you're going to do your best to try to get Christ into this community as a light and as salt, one of the ways that you can do it is by speaking kind words to people. If you want to have joy that comes your way, you can begin to basically sow that seed by the kind words that you speak to the people that you come in contact with. I want you to be so kind to everybody, whether it's somebody that comes to this church or somebody that you meet in a grocery store. I want you to be so kind to them that they go, there's something different about that man. There's something different about that woman. I need to watch them. And I hope that your testimony is so glorious that people have nothing to say but good by the way that they have been treated by you. Kind words. It's a pretty big deal in the Bible.